It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Shannon Bream. The Speaker of the House and the President have a debt limit deal, but do they have the votes? I'll ask the Speaker live this morning. Just days ahead of the deadline, lawmakers are zeroing in on a 2-year deal. It would suspend the limit on how much the nation can borrow.
This is an agreement in principle that's worthy of the American people.
Now the race is on for Congress to approve the deal and avoid financial chaos. But can party leaders sell the compromise to their rank and file?
And I think once people read the bill, they'll be pretty excited.
This morning, you'll hear the latest directly from the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. It's an interview you will see only on Fox News Sunday. And we will bring you reaction from Democrat Jim Himes of Connecticut. Plus, Ukraine's military makes a major push against Russia, the pivotal counteroffensive coming as Ukraine prepares to receive fighter jets from Western allies and just days after President Zelensky met with world leaders. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham joins us live from Europe, fresh off his meeting with the Ukrainian president. We'll ask the senator what the two discussed behind closed doors. Then, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis jumps into the 2024 campaign, ready to blitz the media and hit the trail.
We got to dispense with this culture of losing.
Now voters are hearing a lot more about what he wants to do if he wins the White House.
I would not want to see the United States with our troops get enmeshed in a war in Russia or in Ukraine.
We'll ask our Sunday panel about DeSantis's opening message to Republicans and about the strategy behind his swipes at former President Donald Trump.
When it came time to make decisions during COVID, do you abdicate your office to somebody like Dr. Fauci, or do you stand up to do what's right?
All right now on Fox News Sunday. Hello from Fox News in Washington this Memorial Day weekend. We are waking up to the news this morning that President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy have reached a debt limit agreement. It took weeks of negotiations and it comes down to the wire. Congressional leaders now must get the agreement through both chambers before June 5th. Some Republicans are already pushing back on certain details, and we've learned Democrats will hold a call later today to talk about what is actually in the deal. In a moment, my exclusive live interview with the Speaker of the House. I'll ask him what's in the deal and whether or not he can sway some very upset critics. And then we'll speak live with Democratic Congressman Jim Himes about the concessions the White House made. But first, let's turn to Chad Pergram, who is live on the Hill following every twist and turn. Hello, Chad.
Shannon, good morning. The deal does not hike the debt ceiling. It only suspends it through the presidential election. The bill caps most spending at a growth rate of only 1%, but Pentagon spending could increase. Now the selling begins.
Conversations I've had with members, they feel great about the deal. I mean, when you're talking about reducing spending, rolling back the regulatory state, clawing back COVID funds, and lifting Americans out of poverty, there is a lot to celebrate.
Kevin McCarthy conceded he did not expect to get all GOP members. Some conservatives are on fire. Ralph Norman tweeting that the deal is, quote, insanity. Bob Good saying that no one claiming to be a conservative could justify a yes vote. Democrats will balk at additional work mandates for healthy people to qualify for some federal benefits.
There already work requirements in place. We're talking about expanding these work requirements. And, you know, I would simply say, it's raised great concerns.
They hope to post the bill today. The House could vote Wednesday. The Senate maybe next weekend, just before the June 5th deadline. Shannon?
Chad Pergram on the Hill. Thank you very much, Chad. Joining us now, Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to Fox News Sunday. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, I don't know how much rest you've gotten, but let's dive in, because you got a deal and now you got to sell it to members. So let's talk a little bit more about some of those who are upset. Congressman Dan Bishop, Chad talked about him. He tweeted this after the call you had with the group last night. Heard the call. Rhinos congratulating McCarthy for getting almost Zippo in exchange for $4 trillion debt ceiling hike was enough to make you. And he used the vomit emoji. Actually, it's so bad they won't give a figure for the debt ceiling hike, only that it's suspended till first quarter of 2025. Our bill was a year less. Your reaction? He's probably a no vote.
Well, that's okay, because more than 95% of all those in the conference were very excited. But think about this.
We finally were able to cut spending. We're the first Congress to vote for cutting spending year over year. So you cut that back. You fully fund the veterans, you fully fund defense, but you take that non-defense spending all the way back lower than 22 levels. Now you get work requirements for TANF and SNAP, where the Democrats said that was a red line. Now you're able to reform NEPA. How frustrating we are with, it's been 40 years since you could streamline it. To build a road in America takes you 7 years of review. We now limit that where it's focused, where you can only review it for 1 to 2 years. We're going to get America working again. We get the process working again, where we always have these omnibuses at the end of the year. We now penalize Congress if they don't get their jobs done. There is so much in this that's positive, and measure it to all the other debt ceilings. When Republicans had the presidency, the Senate, and the House, did they ever cut spending? No, they increased it. We were able to do this when the president said he wasn't even going to talk to us. This is really a step in the right direction. It puts us a trajectory that's different. We put a statutory cap on only spending 1% for the next 6 years. So we let government grow, but at a slower rate.
So let's put at that point, there's a lot there, but on that issue of spending, the White House is sending around its side. And of course, they're going to take credit too and want a victory lap. They say this, there are no budget caps after 2025, only non-enforceable appropriations targets. We all know how non-enforceable targets work in Washington. So they say, you might have gotten something for a year or two, but after that, there's nothing to it.
No, first of all, watch what the government has done before. They increased it.
Okay, but are they not telling us the truth there?
No, you have a statutory cap on there. We've got to be able to stay in the majority. Then we could have a rule to be able to keep it going forward. The other thing you have here, too, is for the very first time, you have administrative PAYGO. We had a president that spent another $1.5 trillion around Congress. That can no longer happen.
Meaning if he takes executive actions,
he's got to cut to be able to go
about
forward.
Where he's going to pay for it.
He doesn't have to talk about it. He has to do it. That would have saved us $1.5 trillion in the first 2 years of this presidency. That's a major savings. That has never been in law before, and now it's being put into law. If you look at each movement here, this is a whole new direction. Just think about how this even came to fruition. Normally, you have a 1,000-page bill. This is going to be less than 150 pages. Normally, the country doesn't know about it till after it's passed. No, we'll wait 72 hours. This is worthy of the American people. I want them to read it. I want them to understand it. We only have the majority in one house with a 5-seat majority, with a president who said we would never talk about this, who had Chuck Schumer said this would be a clean debt ceiling. We would just raise it. That's not the case. You've got work requirements to help people out of poverty into jobs. You've got reforms that we can build things, cut the red tape. We capped so the president can't just spend money wildly. We're actually spending less than we spent last year. That hasn't happened in Congress. So maybe it doesn't do everything for everyone, but this is a step in the right direction that no one thought we would be at today.
Let's talk about work requirements, because you all have said it was sort of a red line. Congressman Garrett Graves, one of your top negotiators on this, when he was asked Friday if you guys were going to back off on that, he said, quote, hell no. But the White House, again, that's an area where they're celebrating. They say there are no changes to Medicaid. You referenced SNAP and TANF. And so basically SNAP includes an expansion for veterans and people who are homeless. So there's an expansion there to some extent for some credits. But the changes that you did get will lift the age and the requirements and those kinds of things, but that they sunset. So they don't last for very long.
You can't tie one Congress to the next. No, they don't. They sunset after 7 years when you go forward. But let's see what the White House doesn't write in there. There's a 12% exemption for every state, and the states are using this to exempt people. We lower that to 8%. We take the age from 49 to 54, so it encompasses more people. What did we exempt? Veterans. I think that's appropriate that veterans get exempted.
Of course.
But what we're talking about...
But those are dollars.
But
when you talk about more benefits for more people.
And you know, at the end of the day, it saves more money, because what does a work requirement do? It's only on able-bodied people with no dependents. Instead of borrowing money from China to pay somebody to sit on the couch, we now give them the process to go get a job. Every study has shown when you do that, it puts more people to work. And when they work, what happens? More people are paying into Social Security and Medicare. You will see at the end of the day, this puts our economy stronger, less dependent on China. We cut money so we stop the inflation the Democrats are doing. This is a tough position, because the Democrats Democrats have spent so much, made it so easier for people to not go back to work, and we just changed the course, shrunk the ability for exemptions on the percentage, and now are going to provide people more jobs.
Okay, let's talk about the IRS, because there had been talk of trying to scale back some of the $80 billion. Congressman Dan Bishop also tweeting on this. He says one of the $80 billion Democrats appropriated, of the $80 billion, appropriated to the IRS over 10 years, the deal rescinds only $1.9 billion. You read that right. That's the kind of get that's so good McCarthy agreed to increase the debt ceiling $4 trillion.
Yeah, let's have the full explanation. Do you know how much they're going to spend this year for IRS agents? $1.9 billion. So we repealed every single dollar they were going to use for IRS agents. So they hired zero. So I have to come back next year. So I don't get all of it repealed, but they have none for this year. I don't understand if you stopped all the hiring of any IRS agents, that is not a win in his eyes. So I'm not quite sure.
Do you have negotiating room, though, next year?
I'm sorry.
Do you have negotiating room, though, next year if this deal is still in place? I mean, what kind of negotiations are the Democrats going to want to engage in?
Well, we have the majority. We can govern and engage in anything they want to engage in. But what we have found, since we've taken the majority, we changed this country. We opened the House back up. We not only have we repealed the IRS agents they're going to have today, we put in work requirements. We're now spending less money, the first Congress to do that, in the Congress before. We've now capped the president that he can't just go spend $1.5 trillion. We've made fully fund our military and our veterans, but the non-defense level goes back to 22 levels, even below that. Think about that. We don't control the Senate. We don't control the presidency. So compare us to when we controlled all three. We didn't do any of that. We spent more money. It's a new day. It's a new Congress. And it's a new Republican majority.
So the Washington Post, writing about this yesterday, said this about what's ultimately in the deal. They said the White House agreed to an inflation-adjusted reduction in direct spending on discretionary programs, but one that will be mitigated by redirecting funds from other areas, such as the money clawed back from Internal Revenue Service expansion. Spending on these programs will rise by 1% in 2025 under the deal. There's a question about whether a lot of this is just a wash, if they're just moving money from one place to another.
Let's think about this. The president increases by $6 trillion. We have always said we're going to call back money, and then we're going to let government only grow at 1%. Why? Because it's been growing at 33% with the Democrats on discretionary spending. The president said we could only look at about 14% of the entire budget to get this done. We've been able to achieve that in this short time frame. But think about what else we repealed. This is the largest rescission in American history. You can add up all the rescissions from all the other Congress. This is greater. And what are we pulling back? CDC's Global Health Fund. So no longer are we sending $400 million of American taxpayers' money to China. We continue to pull that back. That is a victory for the American public, and I'll debate this bill with anybody, because at the end of the day, is it everything I wanted? No, but we don't control all of it. But it is the biggest rescission in history. It is the biggest cut in Congress has ever voted in that process. And you know what? We've been able to do it by making the economy even stronger, by putting work requirements in to put people back to work, and then streamline NEPA that hasn't been done in 40 years. We're going to cut the red tape. So if you want to build a road, if you want to put renewable energy, you want to have our energy become energy independent, you now have it streamlined and an opportunity with a time frame for review instead of 7 years to one.
I want to ask you about student debt relief, because I'm hearing two different stories from what is in here and what's not. So you all have said that the pause on student debt repayments is going to lift. Is that my understanding? So that they'll come back. But the White House says this, the budget agreement keeps in place the president's plan to provide student debt relief for hardworking borrowers recovering from a once-in-a-generation pandemic. They make it sound as if their program's not going to change at all. Of course, we're waiting on the Supreme Court to decide on this.
Okay, but don't confuse the two. What the president did, he went unconstitutionally and said he was going to waive certain people part of their debt for student loan. But then he paused everybody's student loan. So everybody who borrowed a student loan within 60 days of the signing is going to have to pay that back.
So you're both getting something on that.
The Supreme Court is taking up that case. But if the Supreme Court came back and said that was unconstitutional, the president could still say he's pausing, not waiving it. Mm-hmm. But now that this is in law, the Supreme Court decision will have to be upheld that they would have to pay.
So the pause is gone.
The pause has gone within 60 days of this being signed.
Okay,
so that is another victory because that brings in $5 billion each month to the American public.
Have you talked to Minority Leader Jeffries? Because I know that you've tried to build a relationship there. It sounds like he's going to have to bring Democrat votes to the table because you've got at least a couple dozen who say that they're not. What's your conversation like with him about how you guys get this across the finish line?
I know when I became Speaker, I wanted Congress to work differently. So I wanted to treat Hakeem the way I wanted to be treated. So I talk to Hakeem every single week. We could disagree about things, but I just want him to know what we're working on. Everything doesn't have to be political. But in every time that there is an agreement and a negotiation between the president and Congress, both parties, when they have an agreement, come together and vote for the bill because both of them talk about it. I don't work with Hakeem to say, I need these many votes. I think you're going to get a majority of Republicans voting for this bill. This is a good bill for the American public. The president agreed with this bill. So I think there's going to be a lot of Democrats that go vote for it, too. Right now, the Democrats are very upset. The one thing Hakeem told me, there's nothing in the bill for them. There's not one thing in the bill for Democrats.
I don't know that that's going to persuade them to join him or you
on
these votes if they need to.
Yeah.
But we'll talk to one of them next. Quickly, you've talked about getting back to regular order, the 12 appropriations bills that have to be passed every year. There's kind of a carrot and stick situation in this to get people to do that. Are you worried that some of your caucus is going to be ticked about how this went down and you're not going to have their support when you need it in September for those bills?
Not at all. People underestimate me every single day and what we've been able to do. Put a border security bill, a parents' bill of rights. We lifted the debt ceiling. What we put in here and what we want to change in Washington is the Washington of old, where they wouldn't pass the appropriation bills. They do an omni bill of $1.7 trillion and send it to the House right before Christmas and have you vote on it, not wait 72 hours. That's all changed. So inside this bill is a provision. If Congress does not do their work and pass all 12 appropriation bills, a continuing resolution goes in, but it cuts 1% across the board. Give you the incentive to do the job. Have the American people actually have a say and a check and balance in here and have their consequences for the lack of action by Congress. So you know what? It's a new day in Congress. It's a new majority of these Republicans, and we're going to change the way we do businesses. We're going to spend less. We're not going to waste taxpayer money and sending it to China. We're not going to pay people to stay home. We're going to give the encouragement to go back to work. We're going to cut red tape so we could build things in America again, and we're not going to reward people in Washington that don't do the job they're supposed to do. They've got to show up and they got to do the work.
Well, we will watch as you do the work of hammering out the text this afternoon. Watch for a vote later this week. Mr. Speaker, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in. All right. Joining me now, Connecticut Democrat Congressman Jim Himes. Congressman, welcome to Fox News Sunday. I want to ask you what you heard from the speaker there, that he says your leader, Hakeem Jeffries, said to him that their Democrats are mad because there's nothing for them in this bill. What do you make of it?
Yeah, that's right, Shannon. I mean, I think there's two problems with the bill. Number one is, none of the things in the bill are Democratic priorities. You know what those priorities are, because in the last 2 years when we controlled the House, we capped insulin at $35 for seniors. We did drug price controls. We passed the biggest infrastructure investment in our country ever. We addressed climate change. Those are our priorities, and not a single one of them are in this bill. Now, that's not a surprise, given that we're now in the minority, but the obvious point here, and the speaker didn't say this, the reason it may have some traction with some Democrats is that it's a very small bill. It's a very, very small bill. Now, had the bill looked anything like what the Republicans passed on the floor, where they rescinded all of the money designed to create an electric battery industry in this country, designed to further reduce drug prices, you would have had unanimity against it. But, the IRS money is a pretty good example. Why the speaker, by the way, wants to defend taking IRS police off the block so that more people can cheat on their taxes is beyond me. But you had the numbers right. $80 billion sent in that direction over a period of time, a very, very small fraction of that has been rescinded. So, again, not a bill that's going to make any Democrats happy, but it's a small enough bill that in the service of actually not destroying the economy this week may get Democratic votes.
You repeatedly said in recent weeks you thought it would take something really bad, a real shock to the markets or something else to actually get a deal across the finish line. Does this ease your worries now? Do you think it gets passed?
Well, it was an uncomfortable position for me to be in. I'm a natural optimist, but I really thought that this might not get done. Now, remember, it's not done yet, and all you need to do is check the social media of the Freedom Caucus, who are just obliterating this deal. And by the way, there'll be a 5 o'clock call today with the Democratic Caucus. I expect to have to hold the phone out here based on what we're going to hear from some of our progressive members. So it is far from over the finish line yet, and of course, if it doesn't go over the finish line, then I think we're going to see the kind of market reaction that none of us want to see. I think back to the I wasn't in Congress in the time, but in 2008, when the Troubled Asset Release Program, the bailout, the TARP, failed on the House floor, there was an instant market reaction. So I hope that I'm wrong in my pessimistic prognostication that this could be a disaster. But look, Shannon, the bigger issue here is we all need to sort of step back and think, all right, maybe this extends it for 2 years, but do we really want to have this conversation in 2 years? What if there's a Republican president? Let's imagine that there's a Republican president in 2 years in January, and now we do exactly what Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans have done over the course of the last couple of months and say, hey, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling, President Trump or President Stevens or President whoever it might be, unless you do the following 7 things. And oh, by the way, on that list, we have single payer health care and the Green New Deal and you name it. Is this really the way we want to do business as a country going forward? This is not how we're supposed to actually pass legislation in the Congress. So I hope that we, you know, get through this and then dispense with the catastrophe, the ransom taking and the hostage and the, you know, the really debilitating qualities of this of this debt ceiling to get back to legislating the way we were designed to legislate.
The president has called it this an important step forward that reduces spending while protecting critical programs for working people and growing the economy for everyone. He says the agreement protects my and congressional Democrats' key priorities and legislative accomplishments. He wants it passed ASAP. Will you heed the president's urging, or have you thought about how you'll vote?
Well, remember, every day I wake up knowing enough history to know that my job is not to do what the president asks me. In fact, you know, in a government of divided powers, I regard my role acting as a check and balance on the president very, very seriously. Now, this takes me back to why I hope we move beyond ransom note and hostage taking as a legislative mechanism, because, of course, I'm tempted to say, no, I'm in no vote, because, as the speaker said, there is absolutely nothing for the Democrats in these things. And oh, by the way, do I really want to validate a process which at the end of the day is a hostage-taking process, even if I get to use it 2 years from now? I don't want to do that. I don't want to present a Republican president with a list of priorities and say, unless you enact these priorities, we're going to blow up the global economy. So the answer to your question, Shannon, is there'll be a 5 o'clock call today. I have not made up my mind. The whole enterprise is a corrupt enterprise in terms of legislating this way. And I'm going to listen to what the president's and his people's arguments are. But no, I'm anything but a clear yes vote at this point.
Okay, let's talk about some new polling that we've got on the economy, because as this plays out, it has real world effects, as you've talked about, and the speaker did as well. 83% of Americans say they're pretty pessimistic about the economy. They rate it as fair or poor. That's actually up 5 points just since we asked in April. When you break out independents, that number jumps to 90%. And then and when you ask Americans how they feel about the president's policies, whether they're helping or hurting, 79% of them say either the president's party policies are making no difference to them and their family or actively hurting their family's economic position. What's your message to those Americans this morning?
Well, I think there is a lot of anxiety out there. Inflation is still too high, right? Now, unemployment is at record lows. More Americans as a percentage of the workforce are working than ever before. Unemployment in communities of color is at record lows. That's kind of your key thing. But inflation is still high. Housing costs are still way too high. That's, by the way, something we should be addressing rather than sort of, you know, fooling around with this debt ceiling stuff. But I understand why there is still anxiety out there. And one of the challenges that we face, Shannon, at the start of our conversation, I tick through what we did in the last 2 years, reduction in prescription drug prices, you know, the biggest investment ever in our infrastructure, our roadways, our railways. That stuff takes some time to roll out, right? I mean, we passed the biggest investment ever in our infrastructure, but it takes a long time to get that roll out. And my constituents are asking me, hey, you passed this big bill. I'm still sitting in traffic. So there is, I think, a gap between an awful lot of what was achieved and when it's actually going to have an effect on Americans' lives day to day.
Congressman Himes, we wish the best with that 5 o'clock call. When you decide how to vote, let us know. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Up next, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis officially throws his hat into the ring for 2024 and reputedly has huge plans for the early voting states. We'll explain and ask our Sunday panel if it's enough to be able to chip away at President Trump's massive lead in the polls.
Fox News Sunday is sponsored by Chase Inc. The Chase Inc. Business Premier Card is made for those who make it happen. Chase for Business. Make more of what's yours.
Okay, everyone. Our mission...
Your love life is important, but your schedule is busy. You don't have time to go to a doctor's office to get treated for your erectile dysfunction. Through Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. Hims is changing men's health care by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for less. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance is needed. If ED is getting you down, it's time to join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/sunday. That's hims.com/sunday for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/sunday. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Well, that's okay, because more than 95% of all those in the conference were very excited.
That is House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in my interview this morning, brushing off concerns that some very vocal Republicans will not support this debt limit deal. Time now for our Sunday group. Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV and radio, Anne-Marie Hordern. Former Biden campaign surrogate Kevin Walling. Fox News contributor Charlie Hertz. And former special assistant for national security to President George W. Bush, Michael Allen. Thank you all for being here with us this morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Shannon.
Okay, so Charlie, I want to start with what you heard from the speaker there. I mean, he says that, yes, he is aware there are very vocal members of the team out there who are not going to vote for this. They've got some very real objections. They feel like this is not anything like the House passed bill from a couple weeks ago.
Well, it's kind of amazing if you stop and think about it, at a time where families across America are all having to make double-digit decreases in their spending to deal with inflation. You've got companies cutting across the board, laying people off in order to deal with the current environment. And it's like the federal government, and you have this in one entire party here. You have the federal government that always gets a pay raise no matter what. They get more money no matter what. And you have an entire party that is completely dedicated to ensuring that it gets bigger and bigger every year, no matter how much hardship that puts on regular people. But this is a tremendous accomplishment for Speaker McCarthy. He didn't, you know, no one thought that he would get this. I think the reason that he managed to get President Biden to the table, he's correct about this, is that nobody thought he would get the original original proposal in the first place.
Or that he would become Speaker at some point.
Exactly. And he's done that. He did manage to get this across the threshold for, you know, even though he's up against, he has a bare majority up against the Senate, up against the White House. But still, we're still talking about like single, you know, 1% percentage points, holding spending down, slight increasing in outgoing years. The problem is still there. And it has to be dealt with. But I think that given what he's up against, this is a big victory for him.
Well, and Kevin, you heard him say, and you heard Congressman Himes sort of concede, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of great stuff in this for Democrats, although some of them are touting wins that the work requirements didn't go nearly as far as Republicans would have wanted and those kinds of things.
Well, Shannon, it's a good thing for Democrats and this president in that we don't default. And I think the majority of the American people don't really understand this process and would hold the president accountable if that happened on his watch. But listen, I think you have Democrats out there touting the fact that Medicaid is fully intact, protecting those 21 million Americans on that benefit. It actually expands, as the speaker talked about, it actually expands eligibility for SNAP and TAMF with regards to the homeless, veterans in this country. It doesn't touch at all the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a goal of the speaker. That's fully intact. Doesn't touch at all the president's policies on student loan forgiveness. So there are a lot of good things in this agreement for Democrats. And Shalonda Young, you know, Steve Ricchetti worked really hard to make sure that those all stayed in place.
Okay, I want to make sure we get to 24 because we have some new players on the scene this week. Gosh, it seems like Tim Scott, Senator Tim Scott got in Monday, but that seems like a month ago. And now we have DeSantis in. Two new big entrants to this thing. And the New York Times had a really interesting piece talking about the plan to help DeSantis make up a lot of ground. They say key political groups supporting Ron DeSantis' presidential run is preparing a $100 million voter outreach push so big it plans to knock on the door of every possible DeSantis voter at least four times in New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, and five times in the kickoff Iowa caucuses. Emory, that is quite an undertaking.
Yeah, it is. But he's very well known in Florida, but he's still trying to get his national appeal up. So this is why he's leaving Florida this week to have a huge kickoff event in Iowa. And it's because he has to be nationally known. The former president leads him drastically.
20, 30 points.
Yeah, in some polls it's even higher, 30, 40%. And that's because the former president has a huge control on 30% of the base. He's obviously nationally known. He actually held the office. So DeSantis needs to make this outreach. And at the moment, some of the media or news coverage around him was actually this failure to launch, as the Trump campaign is calling it, because it was 26 minutes on this Twitter space.
I was on there. How many of us were on the Twitter space waiting?
Well, I was having some issues at some moments, but it was only 26 minutes in. We only heard from the governor saying, I plan to run for president, and it wasn't even on camera. I think it was the first president since FDR that we didn't even see the face.
Yeah.
So this has to be a huge push for them, right? They have a ton of money. Left over him for governor. He brought in $8.2 million in his first 24 hours announcing. That's quite, an accomplishment for them. But he has to be known, and that's why they need to get out there.
Well, and somebody who else is getting out there, we talked about this last week, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. He had an ad out that kind of raised eyebrows. It's him and President Reagan at the Reagan Library. There were questions about that. This week he had another ad out called Parents Still Matter. This is by his PAC. And the New York Post has this report. Not only has Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin told confidants he's reconsidering a 24 presidential bid, but he's also privately been meeting with prospective donors, telling them he is open to entering the race if he sees a path.
This is a great story for the Republicans. We have a deep bench. We've got Ron DeSantis. We've, of course, got Glenn Youngkin. Both of them, I think, are in touch with where the Republican base is. They're both fighters. They both care very much about the state of the economy. And, of course, they care very much about education. That was exhibited by both of them during COVID. I think both of them have a terrific shot going forward. I think they're both fighters. And that's what I think Republican primary voters want. They want to be able to win the next election so that we can make more progress on all of our priorities.
Yeah, we'll see what those ads turn into, what they actually mean. Okay, but quickly I want to get to this because polling out this week is really tough from CNN. A whopping 66% of Americans view a Biden victory in the upcoming presidential election as either a disaster or a setback for the United States. Kevin, two-thirds of the country think that reelecting their current president would be a disaster or setback.
Well, we've got about 15 months to shift that narrative, and the president's going to get back out there on the campaign trail. The vice president is playing a really active role. She gave the first commencement address at the West Point for a woman to address those cadets. So I think, you know, again, as the president says all the time, and if you're watching at home, take a drink. Don't compare me to the almighty. Compare me to the alternative. Mm-hmm. And the mess that is going to play out on the Republican side.
Man, if we had a drinking game during Fox News Sunday, don't start too early. Maybe it's a mimosa. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Panel, do not go too far. Up next, Russia claims it's taken a key eastern Ukrainian city after months of fighting, as Ukraine is now continuing to prepare to launch that highly anticipated counteroffensive. A Republican senator, fresh off a visit with President Zelensky, joins us live from overseas. Next.
Cashback 5% on
right now, Ukraine is preparing to launch a major counteroffensive push against Russia. Western allies have given billions of dollars of military support and financial aid, but Ukrainian President Zelensky says his country needs more and different weapons. My next guest has just made the trip to Ukraine, where he met directly with President Zelensky. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham joins us now from London. Senator, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Thank you.
All right, before we get to that, I want to talk about your reaction to the budget deal as we now understand it, because based on your tweets, you do not think that the defense spending part of this is a good deal, because it essentially gives the president what he was asking for in his budget when it comes to defense spending.
Yeah, well, number one, I respect Kevin McCarthy. I want to raise the debt ceiling. It'd be irresponsible not to do it. I want to control spending. I'd like to have a smaller IRS. I'd like to claw back the unused COVID money, and I know you can't get the perfect. But what I will not do is adopt the Biden defense budget and call it a success. Kevin said that the defense is fully funded. If we adopt the Biden defense budget, it increases defense spending below inflation. 3.2% increase in defense is below inflation. The Biden defense budget takes the Navy from 298 ships to 291 at a time when China is going to increase their Navy by almost a third. So the Biden defense budget was a joke before, and if we adopt it as Republicans, we will be doing a great disservice to the party of Ronald Reagan. The biggest winner of the Biden defense budget is China, because they'll have a bigger Navy, and it will be Putin. There's nothing in the budget for Biden to help Ukraine win a war that they're on the verge of driving the Russians out. So I like Kevin a lot, but don't tell me that the Biden defense budget fully funds the military. We've attacked it for a year as Republicans because it takes the Navy in decline at a time we need a larger Navy to contain China. The overmatch with China is real. The Biden defense budget makes it even worse for us. So I look forward to the details, but if you send me the Biden defense budget to the United States Senate and declare it fully funds the military, you will have a hard time with me.
I like that you edited yourself for Sunday television. I could see where you're going there, but does that mean that you would be a no? Because you obviously sound very concerned about the default the default portion of this. Would you be a no overall?
I am not going to do a deal that marginally reduces the number of IRS agents in the future at the expense of sinking the Navy. The Biden defense budget takes the Navy from 298 to 291 ships. The Navy suggests that we need 373 ships to deal with the threats we face as a nation. How do you get to 373 ships if you're spending below inflation? That's just the Navy. The Air Force is in the same world. Listen, this is sequestration potentially 2.0. In 2011, my good friend Mitch McConnell negotiated a deal with Joe Biden that virtually destroyed the Defense Department in the name of raising the debt ceiling. If this is another round of sequestration, not only will I vote no, I will not be intimidated by June 5th. This is Memorial Day weekend. We're celebrating those who died for our country. I am a Republican from the Reagan camp. Ronald Reagan would not do this to our military. The defense team of Joe Biden, I've lost faith in a long time ago. I've been making light of the Biden budget as being inadequate, a win for China. And if you ask me now to swallow it because of the debt ceiling, you can forget it. The number one job of every member of Congress should be to defend the nation. And the Biden defense budget does not do it. Kevin has a hard job. I like him a lot. But my good friend John McCain voted for sequestration in 2011, thinking we would never do the cuts that we actually did. 2 years later, he says it's the worst vote he ever made. We're doing the same thing all over again in the name of raising the debt ceiling. We should raise the debt ceiling, but we should not cripple the military's ability to defend the nation as a trade-off. Mm-hmm. Spending below inflation is not fully funding the military. Cutting the size of the Navy only helps China.
All right. I want to make sure that we get to where you've been in meeting with President Zelensky there in Ukraine. They're gearing up for a counteroffensive. Any hope or any thoughts that there are any diplomatic efforts in the offing? Because the Council on Foreign Relations writes this: the Ukrainian public overwhelmingly supports reclaiming every inch of Ukrainian territory, including Crimea. Putin insists that any peace talks recognize Russia's claim to Crimea and the Ukrainian oblasts of Donetsk, Kherson, Luhansk, and Zaporizhia. So the Ukrainians, rightfully, they want their land back. Putin doesn't want to give them any of it. He seems willing to expend lives endlessly on both sides of this thing. How does it end?
Well, here's how it ends. I want to end the war in Ukraine by defeating Putin. The counteroffensive is afoot right now. In the last 400-something days, the Ukrainians have defied every expectation. They've weakened and bloodied the Russian army inside of Ukraine. I expect major gains in the coming days and weeks. The Ukrainians have had a weapon called the Storm Shadow provided by the British that's wreaking havoc on the Russians. They need longer-range rockets called ATACMs, and they need cluster munitions to defeat the Russians. I think they can expel Russia from Ukraine. I want the war to end. But in 2014, we did a deal with Putin, giving him the Crimea. What happened? He invades to try to take the whole country. If you want to end the war in Ukraine, which I do, defeat Putin. I want to end it so we don't have more war. If you let Putin get away with this, China will take Taiwan. I want it out of Afghanistan, but I didn't want to give the country back to the Taliban. So to all the smart people out there, the best thing you can do is give Ukraine the ability to evict the Russians, to liberate their territory. They're not asking for one soldier. They're asking for weapons and technology, and it is in our national security interest to make sure they can beat Putin, and they are on the verge of driving the Russians out, so we need to keep helping them. All of our allies need to be all in and helping Ukraine. They can win this. They can liberate their territory with American help, and nobody's talked about how we're going to help Ukraine win against Russia. I am talking about it. They can do it. They're on the verge of a major counteroffensive that needs support.
Well, let me ask you about this quickly, because Republicans and Democrats on the Hill have openly expressed concerns about our inability to help other places that need us. Taiwan, we've got billions in back-ordered weaponry and those kinds of things. Defense News says this: Ukraine's consumption of U.S.-supplied material is outstripping the capacity of American defense firms to quickly replenish it. Center for Strategic and International Studies report last month found that the U.S. defense industrial base is unprepared for a notional battle with China over Taiwan. How do we manage that? Yeah.
Well, number one, you don't pass a defense budget below inflation. We are overmatched. We do need more weapons. But letting Putin dismember Ukraine and get away with industrial-sized war crimes gives you more war, not less. If Putin is allowed to win when he can lose, if we do the right thing, there goes Taiwan. If you don't see the connection between Ukraine and China, you're missing a lot. We need more defense spending. They're right about the weapons. We need to increase our arsenal. We have multiple threats. Let's help Ukraine defeat Putin, end the war on favorable terms in the Ukraine. You'll make China less likely to invade Taiwan. The defense budget they're proposing as part of this deal makes it impossible for us to do the things we need to do. You're reducing defense spending at a time we need more of it.
Senator, we know your position well, and we wish you safe travels back to the U.S. See you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Up next, the list of politicians facing major legal and political troubles is growing this week. Serious new allegations against state and federal officials. We'll break it down next.
Annika, have you
take a bigger look at this?
Mark tackles our nation's latest headlines and makes sense of the issues that matter most. Sundays at 8 on Life, Liberty, and Levin.
The evidence is substantial. It is alarming and unnerving.
That is Texas House Republican Andrew Murr, chair of the General Investigating Committee there in Texas. His reasons for impeaching Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. We are back with the panel. Michael, that's what happened yesterday. The House voted overwhelmingly to send this now over to the state Senate there, which ironically, the attorney general's wife is a state senator there in Texas.
Well, I read through the articles of impeachment. It's very, very serious. It's abuse of office. It's also alleging a variety of bribes to the tune of please renovate my house and in exchange for favors. So I'm glad that the Republicans down there are acting out against one of their own, because it's an abuse of trust and it breeds cynicism in American politics. So they should prosecute it to the fullest.
Well, Amory, he's got a lot of defenders out there. President Trump, Ted Cruz, others who are saying it's because he's so conservative and he's going after what they call the rhino Republicans in Texas. That's why he's having this trouble. He said the same thing. He denies all the allegations and says this is just kind of a political witch hunt on me. But Republicans are very involved in this.
They're not just involved. They're the ones, at least in the House of Representatives,
leading the way.
That led the way. And we have to see what happens in the Senate. What's interesting, you mentioned his wife. She is a senator. But not only that, the Texas Constitution says that all senators need to be present for an impeachment trial. But also, if it's personally involving you, you have to recuse yourself. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting on how she votes or doesn't vote. But what's going on there, it does seem like this was beyond the pale for Republicans. I mean, this is an individual that for years there's been allegations against him. And what seems to have done him in this time is when he went to the state and asked for funds from the state to end a settlement for these whistleblowers that were part of his team. And this is more than $3 million. And for Republicans, they were saying, we cannot give you state funds for this. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be why you saw this happen so quickly over this week.
Okay, so let's bring it back here to the federal level, because Senator Bob Menendez, who has faced, you know, allegations and trials and things before about things, apparently may be back in the hot seat. The New York Times reporting this week, federal prosecutors and the FBI are investigating whether Senator Robert Menendez or his wife received unreported gifts of a luxury car and an apartment in Washington from a halal meat company that is also the focus of a criminal inquiry. Two people with knowledge of the matter said on Thursday. His spokespeople are saying this is going to wash out. There's nothing to it. He's going to be fine. They're denying the allegations. But this is not his first rodeo on this.
It's true, Shannon. And of course, as you said, that his spokespeople, the senator himself, has said there's nothing to this. There's an investigation that is playing out. You mentioned the fact that he was cleared in 2015 of similar charges in terms of gifts being exchanged and things like that. But there is a clear line in terms of whether this senator is guilty or not, based on disclosure laws and based on was there anything traded for that in terms of legislation or policy changes and things like that. I think that process is clear and will clear the senator, just as it did in 2015.
Yeah, and so folks know, he had a mistrial in 2017 on corruption charges, and then before the DOJ retried him, the judge dismissed all of these charges. So, Charlie, he said this is another one of these cases where it's not going to stick.
Yeah, it's sort of hard. I mean, you know, whether he did get ultimately cleared the last time, but there's a lot of sleazy stuff that he was involved in. And I think it's also sort of interesting going back to the Ken Paxton situation that you know, a lot of these allegations that he's been charged, has been accused of, began back before. He's won two elections since some of these first allegations have been made. And I think it sort of underscores the degree to which people, voters, have a very low regard for public figures these days. And it makes it all the worse when you have the what is clear weaponization of this process, based on politics. And we've seen this with President Trump, the allegations made against him. And it really does make regular people who read stories about, like, say, Ken Paxton, and they think, well, is this real or is it not real? I had to sort of dig down myself, because you believe it. And suddenly I'm a conspiracy theorist who believes it when a politician says, oh, no, they're just framing me. I'm like, well, it won't be the first time they've done this. And well, so and that's not good for us as
a
country.
Well, no, it's not, because we all need to have faith in our legal system, that it operates well as we as officers of the court want it to and expect it to. Fairness, equal justice under the law for all. You mentioned the president, the former President Trump. I mean, he is obviously now waiting word of potential federal indictment. Rolling Stone says this: Trump's lawyers have warned him, get ready to be indicted by the feds. It says they have bluntly told him they expect the Justice Department to charge him in the criminal investigation into his hoarding of highly classified documents following the end of his presidency. Who thinks he actually benefits if that indictment happens?
Oh, it helps him completely. As all of this, he's going to be like a Christmas tree of indictments by the time we have an election. But the stupidity of it is that you go after him for things like having an NDA, signing a non-disclosure agreement with somebody, or this the newest one about the records in Florida. These are ridiculous cases, and this is what undermines people's faith in our justice system to actually prosecute.
I'm starting to wonder, though, because I know the conventional wisdom is that it's a witch hunt and that people are after Trump. But I think the essence of what the case against Trump is in the Republican presidential primary is love the guy, did a great job as president, but too much drama, too much to see here. Let's move on to one of our successful governors. And so it's at least plausible to assess that after a few more indictments and on serious matters, that people might say it's time to move on.
But history shows Trump will bring in the money after this.
He will.
This is when he really, yes, exactly.
And obviously polling, too. As we've seen, he has pulled away quite decisively from the pack for now. All right, panel, thank you very much. We'll see you next Sunday. Up next, a time-honored Memorial Day tradition that has lasted three quarters of a century as we honor our fallen. We'll be right back.
Fox News Sunday is sponsored by Chase Inc. The Chase Inc. Business Premier Card is made for those who make it happen. Chase for Business. Make more of what's yours.
I brought in Ensure Max Protein.
It is an image that you have seen probably every Memorial Day weekend if you've been around for 75 years now. Soldiers from the U.S. Army's Old Guard do this. They place simple American flags along rows and rows of headstones in Arlington National Cemetery. This day, it's called Flags In. It's a quiet, reverent way that we honor our nation's fallen heroes. All told, get this, the Old Guard places more than 260,000 flags there at Arlington. They do it every year. God bless them. And just a reminder, you can hear all of today's program on the Fox News Sunday podcast. You can download and subscribe it at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you like to get your podcasts. And don't forget, you can always set your DVR to record the show each week on your local Fox station or Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. That is it for us today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Shannon Bream. Hope you have a meaningful and memorable Memorial Day weekend. Our best to those who have gone before and the families they've left behind. We'll see you next Fox News Sunday.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to Fox News Sunday ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.